The new chef at Cafe Sebastian is not so new anymore. She's been running the show for close to a year now, and in that time, one of the more surprising things that's happened is that diners who have read her bio online have been coming to the restaurant hoping to try Lebanese food. Chef Remy Ayesh grew up in Kansas, Wichita to be exact, but her dad's side of the family is Lebanese. So this weekend, Cafe Sebastian is hosting a special Lebanese dinner honoring the chef's own family roots. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and Chef Remy Ayesh is here with us now. Hi, Remy.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here. This dinner is actually the first in a series.
It's the first in a series, and you know, really, this was it came about in a way to drive business and for our dinners. And so I had previously lived in Chicago, where a restaurant was doing an entire month-long, you know, 1920s France. And so I thought, well, why don't we do a country? And it just naturally came about that, you know, people were asking about Lebanon and my, you know, my heritage and wanting Lebanese food, which was bizarre to me. But I thought, well, if this is what they want, then let's do it.
So you grew up in Wichita, as I've mentioned, but with one set of grandparents from Arkansas and the other from Lebanon. And I'm curious about how those two different influences kind of combine in your like earliest memories of food and culture.
Well, it was, you know, I think I mentioned in earlier interviews that my career sort of revealed itself to me, and I didn't ever realize that food would be my 9-to-5. But I've been cooking and, you know, jarring and canning and gardening with my Arkansas side of the family, my southern side of the family. And then on the other side, you know, it was having these elaborate Lebanese dinners with my Siddi and Jitto on Christmas Eve. And so
is that the what, grandmother?
I'm sorry. Yes.
No.
Yeah, that's a grandma and grandpa. And so I look back at my past, and all I've ever been doing is having food in my life and cooking. And that was a central, you know, thing in my life that I just never thought would be a career. So yeah, they both, you know, leaned in pretty hard as far as influences.
Tell me more about the Arkansas side, first of all, and what that food experience was
I'll
like.
I'll probably get in trouble for saying that they're from Arkansas, because I think my roots go deeper than that. But, you know, that was brown beans and cornbread. It was fried potatoes, which aren't French fries. They're fried potatoes. Very different. You know, and it was every single dinner that I had at my grandma's house, we had a green onion on our napkin. And my grandpa ate a cornbread and a glass of milk. So we had all these really interesting traditions on both ends, you know.
I've never heard about green onions on the napkin.
It was just our thing. It was just my grandpa. In fact, there's a picture of me. I love this picture. I'm eating the top of a green onion. It's in the ground, down to the ground. So, yeah, and he's holding on to me, and I just started gnawing at the top of the green onion. So, yeah, I have these very interesting, you know, and unique to me experiences, but that all led to me, you know, loving food.
And tell me more about the elaborate Lebanese dinners you were just describing.
So, my parents divorced early, and so we spent Christmas Eves at my dad's house, and on my mom's on Christmas Day we would go to my mom's side of the family. And so my Siddi, who actually isn't Lebanese, but she married a Lebanese man, and so she learned all of these very, very intense Lebanese recipes, and would just go all out. I mean, she would put on, I don't know, I would say, you know, 10 to 15 dishes every single Christmas Eve, and they're very, very, very labor intensive. But it was only her, and I would just kind of stand in the kitchen and help her here and there. But it was baffling how much work she put into it. And every single Christmas Eve, that's what we looked at. We would ramp up our emotions and excitement to be able to eat all of this food that she would produce.
What kinds of food?
So there were meat pies. There was always labneh and Syrian bread. Kibbeh was probably our favorite. So kibbeh is a raw, it's usually raw lamb meat mixed with bulgur that's then ground. So it ends up becoming sort of a pate. And that's served with Syrian bread, clarified butter, and raw white onion. So, you know, when doing this dinner that I'm doing on Saturday, you know, my challenge was to make that food, that traditional food that I just thought was just a family meal, basically into a sort of a fine dining experience, and to make it look sexy. So that it's been quite a challenge.
That's a challenge.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how you've approached that challenge? I mean, has that been kind of a personal journey, or does it feel just very all business?
Very much both. So, you know, I've been tasked with taking what's essentially casserole, you know, family meal type food, and making it beautiful and presentable on a plate that diners would want to come in and enjoy. So I've kind of had to reconcile two sides of myself, which is my traditional past of understanding Lebanese food and also wanting to make sure that the diners are feeling that they're getting the experience that they want from me as a chef and with this food. So it's been a struggle, and I have an incredible team behind me that's really kind of gone down this journey with me and really sort of taken up, my projections on their own. And it's been a beautiful journey for me to watch my family, my kitchen family, produce recipes that my actual family have, we've been cooking our whole lives.
I want to go back to your past a little bit more, because is it your grandparents had a steakhouse, right?
We had, they had an Ash family steakhouse. I'm really struggling, and I wish I could have done a little more research before this, but, I think well known is that my Jito and Siti, they ran the Shocker Club down in Wichita. And I think that's where they kind of got their name as far as in the food world. So I remember spending, days and nights in a booth or back in a kitchen, and my Jido introduced Lebanese food and sort of the Mediterranean style of eating, which is little small plates that you share. And he introduced that 25 years ago. And Wichitans, really on the whole, no one understood that. No one understood getting a course of olives. That didn't make sense to anybody.
In a steakhouse, too, where might have been really specific expectations.
I think he was just trying to market himself. Honestly, I think, a steakhouse, that people understand what that is.
Yeah.
And so to get him in the door, I think he just put his name and steakhouse on the sign and hoping to get, people in the door. And once they got in the door, I just don't think they understood the food, which was too bad because he was so far ahead of his time.
The whole small plates thing.
The whole small plates thing. Yeah. Before it was even, a household name, before that was even a thing.
So tell me more about just, this experience of people wanting Lebanese food or wanting to experience that side of you and your past when they come to Cafe Sebastian?
Well, it's quite revealing. I mean, I try my best to sort of sneak in Lebanese flavors here and there. So tahini is usually always on my menu. I always try to sneak in labneh, other things like pomegranate molasses and just pomegranates themselves, rose water, orange blossom water. So those things I'm always trying to sneak into my food history. Really, I'm French trained. I fell in love with food in Spain, and I gravitate towards Italian restaurants. So really, I'm sort of operating out of a European sort of food base. But then I'm tasked with, first of all, meeting expectations of people, of guests and diners, but also, wanting to represent my history, which is, of the Lebanese and Southern descent. So it's quite the task to sort of, rally all those things together in a cohesive way.
Tell me more about your path as a chef, because, it's very international, as you've mentioned. You've also worked in New York and Chicago and Aspen, right?
Correct. So I went to KU. I was a business major until junior year. And I didn't want to – I got to calculus three, and I just thought, I love math, but this isn't for me. So I dropped a couple of degrees, and I gained journalism because I wanted to food write. So I left KU, and I went to New York City to get a job in basically PR and operations for a very famous jewelry designer, hoping to somehow parlay that into a food magazine. And that didn't happen. What ended up happening is I sort of got burnt out in that world. And a friend of mine once told me, he said, I always thought you would own your own culinary school. And I thought, that's the weirdest thing. Because to me, food hadn't yet become a career. So on a whim, I toured the French Culinary Institute. That was its name at the time. It's now the International Culinary Center. And I just thought, this is for me. I grew up playing a ton of sports, so I already had a team player mentality. I was also a hyper creative, and so this really blended the two things. It was a brigade atmosphere. We wore a uniform, and our medium was creativity. It was food. So I ran with it. And at the time, I was also food writing. I was taking a food writing course from a woman named Kate Crater. She's now at Bloomberg. She was at Food & Wine at the time, so she was on her own journey to be a really well-known food editor. Anyway, so I wrote a profile piece about this man named Richard Betts, who is also in and of himself very well-to-do in the world of food and wine. And I called him up after I graduated culinary school, and I said, where is it at? Where do I go? I think I'm over New York. And he said, you have to come out to Aspen. So after I moved out to Aspen, it's really been 12 years of kitchens ever since. And all of those 12 years included 8 years in Chicago, 4 years in New York, I actually went back to the French Culinary Institute and became a chef instructor at one point. So yeah, I've kind of done the gamut of kitchen gigs. And so, you know, in looking just at my life, which is not always in chefdom, I kind of wanted to move back to a smaller market where I had better quality of life. And that's when Kansas City came across my page.
So now here in Kansas City at Cafe Sebastian, you're doing this dinner. And I understand that at this Lebanese dinner this weekend, one of the dishes is something you used to eat at your grandparents' church in Wichita?
Yes. Yeah, so most Wichitans know that St. George, every single year, there's a Lebanese dinner. And the Lebanese dinner, you buy a ticket for it, and they turn the entire church parking lot into sort of a drive-thru. So you drive up, you never get out of your car, you turn in your ticket, and someone from the kitchen walks out this little clamshell, styrofoam clamshell of delicious food, and it was always rizan yakni. And rizan meaning rice, yakni meaning tomato-based meat sauce. It was that and a couple other players. I think there was a cabbage roll in there and some baklava. But it was a thing. You just, hey, do you have tickets to Lebanese dinner? Yeah, do you want mine? Or, hey, can I get you a ticket to Lebanese dinner? So I based my main entree on rizan yakni. And that was the most difficult thing because it's literally, it's just rice with a tomato sauce, you know, with stewed meat and green beans. And so I had to somehow make that sexy. And so that was my biggest challenge, was making this food that came in a styrofoam clamshell, something that people would want to pay $75 a plate for.
What is the biggest change that you made?
Oh, gosh. There aren't really changes to flavors. It was changes in presentation. That was my most difficult. And so I did a lot of research. I looked up a lot of, you know, very high-end Lebanese restaurants. How were they representing Lebanese food in their minds? And so, yeah, I just, out of a lot of research, I'm hoping that people are happy with what they're getting. The flavors are on point, though, so that's what I'm happiest about.
Chef Remy Ash with us from Cafe Sebastian. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
The first dinner in an international series riffing on the foods of different countries is a Lebanese dinner honoring the chef's own heritage. That's tomorrow night at Cafe Sebastian. And now we're about to turn our focus to burritos and wraps, starting with a visit to Yoli Tortilleria in the East Bottoms. It's run by a local couple. They've been hard at work making fresh tortillas from scratch for the last 8 months or so. We sent our producer, Matthew Long Middleton, to check it out.
I met Marissa Gensarelli and her husband slash business partner, Mark, at their factory. It's right next to the towering General Mills plant, and the train tracks across the parking lot rattle with idling locomotives. Inside the factory, there are tall ceilings, workbench, and despite several 2,500-pound pallets of raw corn, it's roomy. Beyond a clear plastic partition, you can see the machinery into the next room. Marissa and I walk through it.
I am from Obregón, Sonora. That's in the Sonoran Desert, so from Arizona, 8 hours south, surrounded by beautiful mountains, and then about 30 minutes from the Gulf of California. So I had the best of worlds with mountains and oceans.
And tortillas she could buy at a stand right outside of her school.
There was a lady always selling us burritos de machaca, which is dried beef. And then they rehydrate it with chopped tomatoes and onions, and they saute it. And usually they have tortillas sobaqueras, which it's flour-based. And this really short ladies, typically, I hope they don't get offended with me by calling them short, but they're short, and they're literally like bouncing over their shoulder, like a large pizza-sized tortilla. They bounce it just on top of their shoulder, and that's called sobaco in Spanish. So that's what they're called sobaqueras. So they go ahead and have this gigantic tortillas, and they fold them, and then they put a little bit of the machaca, and that's what you have in the morning.
And the tortillas followed Marissa home.
Tortillas were always on the table. So you might have spaghetti for dinner, and there will be fresh corn tortillas on the table every day. So it's kind of just ingrained in you.
So much so that it kind of became a problem when she moved to Kansas City.
We were traveling to Mexico a lot, and we're like coming back, and we're like, oh my God, this, like, the tortillas that we get, they're not quite there. So if you want a good stone ground tortilla, they're hard to find.
So Marissa and Mark tried to make it for themselves, and they tried a lot of different home methods.
They taste okay, but they're not quite there. So that's when we decided we needed to take the big step and just take a dip and do it.
Doing it includes getting a lot of corn kernels and putting them into what looks like a steel tub big enough to easily fit two men. You soak the corn with water and add lime powder to help soften the shells of the kernels. Then fire up the large burners underneath the tub and bring this kind of corn soup to a specific temperature depending on what kind of corn you're using and let that simmer overnight. The next day, Marissa and Mark transfer that substance to another machine, which has two large volcanic stones which Mark has carved channels into. Those stones press together and grind the kernels into masa, which is like a really thick, doughy paste. That paste gets fed into a hopper, and a cylinder drum presses and cuts the tortillas to size as they slide onto a conveyor belt, taking them to a long oven. There are three levels of belts the tortillas pass through in the oven, flipping each time they drop down a level. It's both a practical step, but it's also an homage to the handmade process.
What it's supposed to do is mimic what a comal would do. And a comal in Mexican culture is typically done with cast iron, and it would be in an open fire. And when you're making your tortilla, you put it on top, and it's really hot, and it cooks one side, then you flip it, cooks to the other side, and then you flip it again, and the last flip is where it puffs. And the amount of puff that you're going to have in a tortilla is how soft is it going to be.
Each hour at the East Bottoms factory, they'll produce roughly 2,500 tortillas. And if you're thinking about trying it at home, Mark and Marissa do have some advice.
In order to grind the corn properly, to get that really fine, consistent grind, you have to have the equipment. It's nothing you can just do at home and grind. So
we tried, and we have a couple of different grinders at home.
But once we got the equipment and got used to carving the stones, just working on the perfect tortilla on a daily basis.
KCUR's Matthew Long Middleton has brought us that dispatch from Yoli Tortilleria in the East Bottoms. I'm Gina Kaufman, and in just a minute, we'll be searching out the best burritos and wraps in town with the food critics. Call 816-235-2888 to join in. 816-235-2888. This is KCUR Central Standard. We're back. It's Friday. The food critics are here on KCUR Central Standard, and we're talking about burritos and wraps in and around Kansas City, because anymore, what don't we put in a tortilla? Call 816-235-2888 if you are obsessed with a specific burrito on a local menu that just rules. We will put it on our official list of the best burritos and wraps in Kansas City. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman here with Charles Ferruza, Carlton Logan, and Jenny Vergara. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Jenny, you have a little history to share on the origins of burritos and wraps?
Well, you know, burritos obviously have been around since the dawn of time. Wraps is really kind of more, I think, where the history piece comes in. And, you know, there's, like everything else in the world of food, there's always debate about where the wrap came from. Some say it came from California out of a chain called I Love Juicy, which, how about that
Great name?
Yeah, so in the 1980s, apparently. And, you know, that kind of makes sense if you think about California cuisine and spa cuisine being very hot then. But also the Boston Red Sox manager, a guy named Bobby Valentine, apparently had a restaurant before he was the Boston Red Sox manager. And he, you know, one day ran out of bread and somebody wanted a club sandwich, like his big investor wanted a club sandwich. So he threw everything into a wrap and called it like the Tex-Mex sandwich or whatever and sent it out. And apparently the wrap was born. So he likes to take credit for it. Even the Wall Street Journal has even given him credit for it. So who really knows?
Carlton, you also have something to say about the difference between a burrito and a wrap.
A burrito, again, the differences. So burrito is typically warm or hot, and a wrap generally is cold in
yeah.
my experience.
That to me, I feel like that's kind of the crucial thing too. Well, a crucial thing.
Well, would a wrap, anything wrapped in a burrito, I should say, is, I like them. One of the reasons I like them is they're not really bread. So in my never to be humble opinion. So is it, are would a tortilla be considerably less heavy on carbohydrates than a piece of bread?
So this was the big thing, right? So we were all sold this bill of goods that tortillas were somehow healthier than bread.
Right.
And then we discovered what actually gluten was. And then we realized, oh, it's still gluten in these tortillas. And so the gluten, the tortillas and bread kind of got thrown out with the gluten bathwater, so to speak.
Okay. But let's get back to how things taste, because I feel like that's our deal here, right? Like, mm-hmm. what tastes good out there on local menus? And I'd like to hear just a little bit about some of you guys' favorites. Carlton, tell me about one of your favorite burritos.
So I think several of us enjoy the breakfast burrito at Red Kitchen Tamales. And whoop, whoop. Jenny can probably talk a little bit more about this.
Absolutely.
But what I like about it is we're probably going to talk a lot about these huge burritos. The breakfast burrito is a lot smaller, so you can probably eat two of them as opposed to one huge burrito.
Wait a minute. Okay, are you saying that always breakfast burritos are smaller, or that at this particular place they are?
I think in general.
Really?
My experience has been that a breakfast burrito is usually a little bit smaller than a mission-style burrito, the big fat honking burritos we see sometimes.
Okay, so go on. Tell me more about this
so
breakfast.
So it's breakfast
burrito.
Wrapped up. So it's scrambled eggs, potatoes. At Red Kitchen, you can choose from chorizo or bacon or sausage. And it's just lots of flavor. Lots of flavor for me.
And yeah, you're recommending this one too, Jenny.
I have to tell you, the single most important thing you need to know about the Red Kitchen tamale breakfast burritos are the tortillas themselves. They're caramello tortillas out of Lawrence, and they are made with local pig fat or duck fat. And they are unlike any flour tortilla you will ever eat in your
life.
You sound
incredibly unhealthy.
No, they are delicious in every way. They're almost translucent because they have so much natural fat in them. And when you heat them up, they are we have so many flat, kind of gummy flour tortillas. These are not them. And she actually sells them in the package. And he's getting ready actually to take his production online, which we're excited about. But you can pick up his tortillas at Local Pig and her place. But that, to me, is what sets her breakfast burritos way, way apart from the rest of the pack. So those tortillas are the jam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what both of you are specifically recommending at this place, mm-hmm. like that breakfast burrito.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. And so what about a wrap? Charles, you seem, just based on your list here, to be more of a wrap guy. Tell me about one of your favorite wraps.
Well, I do like the wraps at, and I don't eat there as often as I should or could, but the wraps at Longboards.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about that place.
Well, it's sort of a wrap happening place. I mean, that's all they sell.
It is the wrap place.
Yes, yes. And they're wrap artists, you know. And yes. They do have bowls and stuff like that and salads, but they grill their wraps.
That is it.
I think that's the secret.
That's the secret to these wraps, for sure.
And I'm crazy about the teriyaki grill wrap.
Describe
all of the Asian ones.
Mm. It's you have a choice of chicken or beef, mozzarella cheese, vegetables, rice, and teriyaki sauce, which of course I love because it's so sweet. You know.
Okay, exactly. But this grilling of the wrap business, I need a little bit more explanation.
Well, it gives it a nice crunchy note, you know?
Absolutely. It takes all that, you know, kind of that soft, gummy, chewy kind of ness out of it. It makes it, the ingredients are warm inside. It makes the tortilla itself warm. It actually physically has grill marks on it.
And now that it's warm, this sort of destroys some of our distinctions between the wrap and the burrito when we were saying that.
He also has cold wraps.
He has cold, yes.
He has cold as well.
Okay, so what else? I mean, all three of you are actually recommending Longboards for wraps. What do you get there?
I get the pork luau, which is pork and pineapple.
Polynesian,
yeah.
Does it have spam in it?
No, it does not.
I'm disappointed.
It does not have spam.
That would make it a traditional Hawaiian wrap.
Seriously.
Right?
But I think the other distinctive thing about Longboards, at least the location I've been to, it has a very beachy feel to it. There's, surfboards on the wall. There's a VW wagon you can sit in. And it's a very colorful place to
Where
visit.
Where is it?
I have visited the one in Lee's Summit, but I think there are
There's one in Mission. Mm-hmm.
They started up north. There's one on Johnson Drive. I mean, they have a handful of them now, kind of scattered through the city.
What do you get there, Jenny?
The Wow Kung Pao. Thank you very much.
Tell
me
more.
It's kind of an Asian-inspired wrap, but it's got warm chicken, peanuts, pepper jack cheese, kind of some stir-fried vegetables, rice, sriracha.
It has great texture.
It's, I mean, and it's a warm wrap that's grilled, which I'm all about that. So, the Asian wraps to me are kind of where this place is, although they do have kind of bigger burritos that you can get that are really packed with protein. I mean, things like hard-boiled egg and meat and kind of more protein-packed stuff. So,
can we say something at this point about I don't like the football-sized burritos at Chipotle, which people seem to think are fabulous, but they're just too awkward to eat.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. We will talk about the shape and size of burritos in one moment, but I do want to invite our listeners to call 816-235-2888 to join in this conversation and tell us about the burrito or wrap that you just love. 816-235-2888. So, okay, that does bring us back to this question. I think the folding and wrapping of a burrito, it's an art, it's a science. If it's done poorly, the contents can be delicious, but the experience of eating it is really challenging. So does anyone have like tips and thoughts about this
Jenny used to slice her big burrito open. And
Charles, you're talking out of school. You're telling on me. Okay.
But it's a great idea. I never thought of that.
Well, I mean, so I've already confessed that I'm not the fan of kind of the soggy tortilla. So yes, if I'm at a Chipotle-esque place and I have one of those, I just slice it and eat the middle. However, if you are a person who enjoys the pick it up and eat it burrito experience, leave the tinfoil or the wrap on and just unwrap that as you are kind of eating down to hold things together. I generally have an issue with burritos mostly because you end up, in order to make it architecturally sound, engineered properly, you end up with kind of this wad of folded tortilla at the bottom that has zero filling in it.
And zero flavor.
And zero flavor, unfortunately. So to make it hold together, you tend to end up with this kind of ball of dough at the end, which isn't very appetizing. So that would be my suggestion.
And I was going to say, I posted a picture on Facebook and with my breakfast burrito, and I had a fork. And someone said, why do you need the fork? You eat it with your hands. Well, yeah, you do, but generally with a burrito, the fillings are going to fall out. Mm-hmm. Even if it's wrapped well, the fillings are going to fall out. So,
although
yes, you need a fork.
That is the plus for a grilled wrap, because that'll hold it together more
effectively. I think that's also the case for the bowl, why we've seen so many burritos go the way of the bowl and have the sister bowl.
Okay, but for the burrito lover, let's talk about burritos a little more. Jenny, tell me about the one you get at the Corner Mexican Food.
So I just heard about this place. It's up in Grandview, and it's this little teeny tiny, you know, kind of house that they've converted. And the chef that's in there actually was also at Martin City Brewery. He was running the kitchen there, I think, for a little bit. But this is 100% Mexican menu, and it's really authentic. I mean, the menu has a surprising selection of kind of tortas and some other things, but his burrito is a really good size. I mean, it's the football-sized burrito, and it's very generous. And, I mean, you get rice, refried beans, lettuce, onion, cilantro, a meat of your choice, and they've got, oh my gosh, over 10, you know, beef, pastor, chicken, chorizo, carnitas, beef and chicken tinga, which is like a spicy, kind of in a spicy red sauce, pork rind and pork leg. I mean, you can have your choice of any of those wrapped in this, but they also have the burrito challenge, which is two flour tortillas laid side by side, filled, massively filled, smothered in sauce, grilled onions on top, grilled jalapenos. And if you can eat the whole thing in some amount of time, you get to eat there for free for a month, I think it is.
I'd take that. Yeah.
I mean, it's like some unbelievable challenge. So if you're down with the big burritos, you might want to go check out the Corner.
Or if you just like competitive eating.
Yeah, which I do not. I am not a fan of that. But some are, you know, might be worth the T-shirt. But certainly the food there is delicious. He has a nice wide variety. So put that on your list to go check out the next time you're in Grandview.
And Carlton, how about Burrito Brothers?
Burrito Brothers. So City Market is a wonderful place, period, because there's so many food areas or food restaurants there. So I like Burrito Brothers. And especially I usually get the burrito with the chicken. You can choose chicken, shrimp, portobello mushroom. There's very, you know, all sorts of options in terms of a protein. But I like the charred flavor of the chicken that's grilled, and you've got it in this burrito, and it's got all the flavors. Yes, it's the big, monstrous mission-style burrito, but just those flavors and the fresh pico and the
guacamole. You say that like it's a bad thing. I mean, I think that's part of the appeal, is you can have a whole meal that's just wrapped in this thing, very satisfying. But I, yeah, this sounds delicious.
I usually eat half of it because I can't eat the whole thing.
Another challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but so Burrito Brothers in the City Market, you were just describing, and, yes. And the you like the flavor of the chicken particularly.
The chicken is my favorite, yes.
And your other burrito recommendation, Benito Michoacan?
Yes. So it's always fun to go to some place where you don't expect to find a restaurant. So when you go to Benito Michoacan, it's a grocery store, a bakery, and just off to the side is this little cafe. It's very authentic. You can choose all sorts of fillings, including tongue, if you're interested, and tripe, if you're a little adventuresome. I usually stay in the steak chicken area, but it's very simple flavors. They have these little booths that you sit at. It's just kind of fun to go there and just enjoy the experience.
So that's Benito Michoacan.
Yes.
Let's talk to Doug in Parkville, who is calling us from 816-235-2888. Doug, good morning.
Good morning.
What do you want to tell us?
Well, I want to say that my vote for a good place to get a burrito is the San Antonio, which is a grocery store, deli kind of place, just west of 7th Avenue. And I gravitate towards pork, but they have the tripe and the tongue and other ingredients that you can put in there. And then I just let them put in everything else but the kitchen sink. And they are great, grande, but they're not humongous like some of your people there have commented on, and I would recommend that to anybody.
What do you like? Do you have anything to say about the flavor, or is it hard to describe?
It's they're well flavored. It's not just plain meat. They do have one of those vertical spits there that rotate around, but I'll have to admit, when I've gotten there to eat, there's always a line, and they're not slicing meat off of that. They already have it processed and ready to build. And
yeah,
to make the things to order as you come through the line.
Well, thank you, Doug. We are still hungry for more burritos and wraps to put on our list of the best ones in town. So for now, we need you to call in and tell us about the delicious tortilla-wrapped goodness that beckons to you. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and I'm here with the food critics, Charles Ferruza, Jenny Vergara, and Carlton Logan. Hi again, guys.
Hello.
Good morning.
We are talking about burritos and wraps at 816-235-2888, and we were just hearing from a caller who is recommending a place called San Antonio in KCK.
Oh, that's the San Antonio Market, which is, I think, one of Kansas City's great treasures. You've been there.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I really love about San Antonio is that it's one of the best butcher shops in Kansas City, which I think people forget. And also, they have an incredible salsa selection for when you buy the food there. And they make their own tortillas, which are really flavorful. I'm sure they're made with lard.
That's right. That's right.
So, yeah, it's a great place and a real CNBC place on Saturday mornings.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk to one of our callers. We've got Cody in Kansas City giving us a call. Hi, Cody.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good. What about you?
All right. I'm calling because I don't know if this is sacrilege or not, but I actually think they're called something different, but I'm a huge fan of deep fried burritos, and I believe they're called chimichangas. But I've got a place that's just so special to my heart down in Osage Beach, Vista Grande, and no matter how amazing the rest of the menu is, I have to get a shredded beef chimichanga every time I go there.
And so where do you go in Kansas City?
In Kansas City, I don't really have a favorite place in Kansas City, to tell you the truth. I don't really go out to eat much.
Oh, okay. Maybe we can find out if our...
Yeah, I was wondering if they knew any place to get, or if it was just like sacrilege to them to deep fry burritos.
What do you guys think?
I think a chimichanga is not actually a Mexican dish. I think it's a Texas dish, if someone can correct
me. Anything represents Tex-Mex. Yeah. Surely the chimichanga is the crown jewel of that.
Although they are beautifully crunchy and nice.
I don't get me wrong. They're delicious. I know Port Fonda does chimichangas, and I'm sure most of the kind of Tex-Mex style, theirs is a little bit more authentic, but most menus usually have some sort of fried burrito.
And we have a tweet telling us about the burrito papas at Ponax. It's vegetarian and delicious, says our listener, also cheap. So that I'm imagining would be a potato burrito if it's burrito papas. Yeah. Anyone else have a vegetarian burrito to recommend?
Well, not a burrito. I mean, there's lots of salad wraps, but I can't think of any. I mean, lots of them do. Well, the corner, I guess I should go back, that I recommended earlier, has a vegetarian burrito.
In Grandview.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds good. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk to Carlos. Carlos is giving us a call from Olathe. Hi, Carlos.
Hi, Gina. How's it going?
Good.
Okay. So I had a couple of places I wanted to recommend. One is a place I've been going to for a long time. It's like all-time go-to for burritos, and it's called Burritos La Chiquita, and it's at like 13th and Minnesota in KCK.
Okay. Tell us about it.
They have like kind of like really traditional kind of home-style burritos. I believe they make their own tortillas there. And, like, unlike other places where you can get, like, an asada burrito or a chicken burrito, they have stuff like picadillo, which is, it's like ground beef and potatoes and peas, like, all kind of stewed together. Or there's this other one I love there called arriera, and it's, like, pork and potatoes and a red sauce. And honestly, it just always reminds me of stuff that, like, my mom used to make and just, like, roll up in a tortilla and make a burrito. It's just got a real, like, home-cooked kind of flavor.
That's awesome. And anything else you want to tell us about just the place itself?
I mean, it's just, like kind of part of the neighborhood. And so like people are always coming and going. It's always really busy. It's really affordable too. When I bring friends there, they're always really surprised at how inexpensive everything is. I think a burrito there is like $3 or $4.
Is there anywhere else you like to go for burritos?
Yeah, the other place that I wanted to recommend, I just came across recently. It's actually out by the airport, and it's called Scott's Kitchen. It's on Ambassador Drive. And I wandered in there just for breakfast one morning and was surprised. They have something called the Burnt End Breakfast Burrito. And it has burnt ends, breakfast potatoes, scrambled eggs, cheese, and salsa all wrapped up into this burrito, and it was just a total surprise, unlike anything I've ever had, and it was really delicious. And the people in there, like Scott, the guy it's named after, he was there and just present, really talked to everybody, and was a really nice guy and stuff. And but anyway, I just thought that was a very, just kind of a total Kansas City burrito.
Yeah.
To be able to have burnt ends and breakfast burrito all in one, and it was just really neat.
Thanks. Thank you so much for calling, Carlos.
All right, thanks.
And Jenny, you also are recommending Scott's Kitchen.
Absolutely. This place is such a hidden gem out by the airport, I have to say. But their breakfast burrito is something I hadn't tried until recently. And you want to talk about engineered appropriately. I mean, it's a beautiful flour tortilla and a thin layer of scrambled eggs on top. Literally, it looks like just like this kind of flat disc almost. And then it's filled with, you know, salsa. And I always get kind of he's got a sausage there that he makes in-house with kind of ghost peppers, I think it is. And it's really good. It makes for a really hearty breakfast. And it's not a giant burrito, but it's a nice size. And he's so nice. Scott is just working so hard out there. So yeah, I love that place. I'm glad he's found it.
Let's talk to Al in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Al.
Hi. Excuse me. Hi, guys. great, you know, as usual, great show. But I'm going to recommend something that's not quite as esoteric and chic, maybe, but a good option for vegetarians and vegans is Los Tules on Broadway, right across from the Kaufman Center for the Performing Arts. They will adjust recipes, and they have vegan and vegetarian choices. They have a spinach enchilada with a mushroom cream sauce that is addictive, and they're very reasonably priced, and they're very nice people, and I just wanted to share that with people. So if they're looking for a vegetarian or vegan Mexican alternative, that's a possibility.
So that's the at Los Tules, and you're saying it's a spinach burrito that's got a creamy sauce on it.
Spinach enchilada with a cream sauce. Yeah. Or you can get it without the cream sauce, obviously, if you're a vegan, and go for the red chili sauce. But there's, you know, there's a lot of options. And
yeah.
I'm a vegetarian, not a vegan, and it's a place that I found to be very very nice and fun to go to. And anyway, that's my suggestion for you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Al.
Animals. Okay.
Thank
love you.
Bye.
Bye.
That's a shout out for a vegetarian option. And maybe there are, I don't know, what about wraps? You guys have a lot of wraps that we haven't talked about yet. And I want to hear about some of those before we turn right back to our callers. How about Twisted Fresh, Carlton?
Twisted Fresh is local, and they have about nine different wraps to choose from. The fresh, like the name says, it's taking fresh ingredients and kind of putting a twist on them. My favorite is the barbecue chicken or the spicy Thai chicken wrap, again, with the Thai Asian. And it's very fresh flavors. Everything is grilled or cooked to order. So very, very good wraps.
And there's a group favorite that we haven't talked about yet in the rap world at The Mix.
Yeah, The Mix is so great. It's funny. I find salads to be actually pretty boring. And they almost always invariably come with some kind of bread or a roll. Mm-hmm. And when a salad is actually in a wrap, you're killing two birds with one stone, you know?
It is a theme. I mean, there's sandwich filling in a wrap, and then there's salad filling in a wrap. You're absolutely right.
And, because it's crunchy and the wrap is soft, it's really, it adds a lot of texture and...
Well, so wait, we haven't told people what we're talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry, forgive me.
The Cobb wrap.
And the Cobb salad is a traditional salad dating back, I think, to the 20s. And... With very specific ingredients, one of which is some kind of meat, often bacon.
This one has turkey and bacon.
And blue cheese. Mm-hmm. And it's nice and crunchy with a lot of different salty and sweet flavors. And it's a big fan favorite, I think.
Yeah,
I like
great.
It a lot. Yeah. It's a cold wrap. You know, you don't grill it.
That's right. It's literally a salad in a wrap.
Nice. Okay, let's talk to, Nate is with us from Parkville. Hi, Nate.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, hey, I had a recommendation for wraps. I know a lot of talk about burritos this morning, but for wraps and stuff, I don't know if this is a chain or not. You guys might be able to answer, but there's a place called Twisted Fresh over in Parkville, like off of Northwest 64th Street. And the shopping, it's kind of like an outdoor mall kind of place, called Twisted Fresh. And I really love the wraps that they have there. They've got one, it's like a Caribbean jerk chicken or a Jamaican jerk chicken wrap.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic.
What's in that one? We heard about some of their other offerings from Carlton Logan, and it sounds like you get the Jamaican jerk chicken. What's in there?
So there's like little bits of like cabbage and pineapple and the chicken is like, it's like a blackened chicken, so it's kind of a little bit of char on it, but also like the flavor of it's just really good. And it's got just enough heat to let you know that, hey, it's got that spice, but then that the soothing little sweetness kind of kicks in. It's
yeah.
Got, just really good all-around flavor.
Thank you so much, Nate.
You got it. Thanks.
Can I ask Jenny and Gina and Carlton? This, I'm eager to go to this Twisted Fresh place. Are these wraps, are they as big as the Chipotle burritos, which I think can be used as a deadly weapon to club somebody to death?
To me, they're a little smaller.
Yeah, I agree with you.
They're a little smaller.
Easier to manage.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And just, Jenny, you have a few more wrap recommendations we haven't gotten to. Pick a favorite. Maybe, yeah. Something we haven't heard about yet.
So I'm going to give Mildred's and the Crossroads a shout out. They have a couple locations. They're actually just announced that they're getting ready to move to a bigger space. They're doing so well. But, you know, it's really hard for me to get anything that doesn't have bacon in it at Mildred's. This might be the one exception. The Chipotle turkey wrap from Mildred's has sliced turkey breast, corn salsa, chipotle aioli, spinach, and avocado on a tortilla, and it's got chips on the side. And Mildred's is just a great little coffee spot if you're needing a meeting. But they also do a heck of a lunch business because there's a lot of little offices around there. So pop in there and try the Chipotle turkey wrap.
Are you anti-bacon?
Mildred's. I'm not anti-bacon, but the place smells like bacon. And so how do you get something that doesn't have bacon when you walk in and the place just, you know, the whole place smells like bacon?
But you make an exception for that turkey wrap.
You know, I'm trying to be good, trying to watch the old waistline there. Yeah.
Let's talk to Kevin in Bonner Springs. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how you guys doing today? I know this isn't really a Kansas City location, but south of Olathe has a little hole-in-the-wall spot called Carmen's Cochina, too. It's at the corner of 159th and Merlin, and they have really good breakfast burritos. Everything's homemade, from the potatoes all the way down to the sausage, and their chorizo breakfast burritos are second to none. You kind of got to get there early, though, otherwise you're going to be waiting in line if you're on a time crunch.
So a popular burrito as well.
Oh, it's very popular, and they're pretty inexpensive. I think the chorizo burritos are $3, and they're just a hometown place, and I think they have like 5 tables in the whole joint. It's pretty small. And I also wanted to chime in on the Bonita Michoacan grocery store that one of your guests recommended. That place is really good, too, not only for burritos but for tacos, but that place has an even longer wait. So if you want to go there during lunchtime, you got to plan at least a half an hour to go through there. But it's worth it. So that's all I had.
Thanks.
South Olathe, not really Kansas City.
No, that Olathe counts. Thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
We didn't annex Olathe, did we?
We should.
He's telling us something we didn't know.
Let's talk with Paula. Paula, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wanted to tell you about California Taco on Kansas Avenue. It's 1268 Kansas Avenue, just a little further west than San Antonio. And they have a wide variety of burritos, and they're big, you know, the size of a Chipotle burrito, but they are so skillfully wrapped, they do not fall apart. And my favorite one is a breakfast burrito with chorizo, eggs, potatoes, cheese, rice, and beans. And all of the burritos are under $5. And they also have traditional Mexican plates and pancakes that are very good.
Pancakes. Every Russian should have a pancake.
Paula, and I appreciate your guarantee that this burrito at California Taco will not fall apart.
Well, you know, maybe yours will fall apart. Mine don't fall apart.
It could be a user error on my end.
I wanted to also say something about the chimichanga. I grew up in South Texas, and I never heard of a chimichanga. And I, you know, grew up on Tex-Mex food. I think it's kind of a new thing, and I never really saw them until I came up here.
Well, maybe that's another mystery for us to solve here on our food shows. What is the deal with the chimichanga? I don't think we are quite certain. So, yeah, that's a mystery for another time. Probably an internet rabbit hole for me. Our time is up, but we'll have all of today's recommendations for burritos and wraps online at kcur.org later today. Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, thank you.
Thank you.
Carlton Logan, co-administrator of the group Kansas City Eats on Facebook and writer for kcfoodguys.com, thank you.
Thank you, Gina.
And Charles Ferruza, our longtime food critic on KCUR. This has been great. Thank you.
Thank you, Gina.
You can listen back to anything you've missed or just want to hear again at kcur.org/centralstandard. It is the weekend, but we love to stay in touch on Twitter, so chat us up there if you want. We're at KCURCST. And there's lots of fun listening material on the podcast Midwesternish, which I host. That's available from iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. Again, it's called Midwesternish. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Matt Groby. Linda Scher runs the board for us, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman. Over and out.